This is CliffCentral.com.
So much to talk about with Justice Malala. He wasn't here yesterday. He was all over the country. I saw him. You were on Frankly Speaking on Wednesday.
Yeah, I enjoyed that. Hey, yeah. It was a great discussion.
Yeah, it was interesting. All about other Zulus taking over.
Yeah. And Rory was fantastic. So I enjoyed that. Yeah,
Muzi Kuzwayo said that you were the country's best political analyst. How do you like that?
I loved him. I wish I could give that guy a gift or something, a hug, a big bear hug. I just enjoyed it. And he's fantastic. I mean, that is one guy we should listen to more often in this country. It was great to have him on the station, actually. It was fantastic.
You should hang around here on a Wednesday. He's often here.
Yeah. Okay. I'll look out for him.
It's time for Justice Malala to give us his insights into what the hell is going on. Every single week we get a chance to catch up with Justice, and this morning is no different. It's time for the Burning Platform with Justice Malala, brought to you by Nando's.
That's Burning right. Platform, fired up by Nando's on CliffCentral.com.
Where do we begin? Let's begin with those polls that you were talking about on ENCA last night. I saw you and Jeremy Maggs. By the way, Jeremy Maggs must stop hunching. Tell him next time. He must sit up straight.
I will be sure to do that.
He's starting to look like Quasimodo on that show. So you were talking yesterday with Mari, the woman from Ipsos. They've been conducting weekly surveys to try and ascertain the temperature of the electorate.
Yeah, and it's a lovely exercise. I quite enjoy it because over the past 4 weeks, what they've done is spoken to thousands of people. They call them on the phone and say, you know, this. So they have a couple of questions for them and ask them about what they think of the mayoral candidates. About, you know, has any significant event happened that that might change your mind and so forth and so forth. And the big thing about last week and the reason why only now I wanted to talk about it was that we had those protests in Tshwane, massive violence going on, and for me, the key thing about what happened there was that it wasn't just people in the community saying, I've had enough with electricity provision or water provision and so forth. It started inside the ANC. If you look at the arrests that one arrest that has been made about the killing of an ANC activist at the Sunday before that sparked of the thing. It's basically internal ANC politics.
Right.
So one of the questions they asked people was, What has happened had an impact on your decision making about who you're going to vote for? And extraordinarily, more than 30% said yes. It's made me think a bit. Now, if one can draw the line from this is what happened in Tshwane, these are the events that took place, to who gets punished, I think the ANC is the one that gets punished. And so in the analysis of when they ask people, who are you going to vote for now? The DA is forging ahead. I think it's at 42% now. And the ANC is at 23%.
In Tshwane. Now, interestingly enough, I mean, it stands to reason. What you've just said explains it very well. You wouldn't reevaluate your vote unless you used to be an ANC voter.
Exactly.
It wouldn't make sense otherwise, considering that all the Tshwane violence the ANC itself acknowledges was ANC-based.
Yeah.
So if that's true for Tshwane, what I found interesting is that there's even some spillover in Johannesburg and even in Nelson Mandela Bay, where you would think they wouldn't even care.
Well, they would care because we are all sitting here, unless you watch the SABC, basically you won't see the chaos on the SABC. But the key thing is that we are all reading our newspapers and we're saying, this is the capital city of South Africa, the administrative capital. And you're seeing roads blocked, you're hearing about people dying, you're hearing about buses burnt. That story... I got a call on that story from a friend of mine who's in Brazil, saying to me, Justice, what's happening in the country? So the Brazil press was carrying that story. So whoever their correspondent, their journalist here is, they were saying in South Africa, this is what's going down. So people in Brazil are sitting there saying, ho ho, what's going on in South Africa?
People in Brazil know more than someone who only has access to SABC television.
That's something we can talk about. Yeah, that in Brazil, they could see those images here at home in many parts of South Africa where you only have access to SABC, to terrestrial television, you wouldn't have seen those images.
There would have been no story about it.
No story. But then the what you're saying about spillover is that, I mean, about up to 25% of people who are polled in this survey say, yeah, it's made me think a little bit about that. If you're the ANC and you've gone from 68% in Nelson Mandela Bay to 51.7% in 2011, if your people who voted for you are thinking about, oh, this thing might make me change my mind.
20 and more percent of the electorate
of
that
the
was
electorate,
surveyed.
That, yeah. And so the ANC, you know, when you do political campaigning, political lobbying, you always assess all the time, how's my campaign going? How's my campaign? With 4 weeks to go, this is when you say, okay, this is...
Put your foot on the gas.
Put your foot on the gas. How am I going to change the tone? That exactly. What you say is absolutely right. Put your foot on the gas. And the ANC now has a choice to continue to do what it's doing with all the negativities, or actually go for it. And it needs that trump card. I'm not sure what that is. Is it going to start playing the populist card? We're going to do this and so forth. And I saw President Zuma yesterday making a big promise that in 5 years, everyone will have electricity and so forth, connected, da-da-da. Well, you know, I remember in 2009, he said 500,000 jobs will be created. And here we are 6 years later. We've lost 5 percentage points in our unemployment index. Unemployment has gone up rather than down. So I don't know about these electricity promises. But whatever it is, the ANC needs to step on the gas, or else there will be trouble.
In your experience, and I'll explain why I'm asking this question afterwards. In your experience, are these Ipsos figures methodologically safe to call accurate? And can we take them as an indication of what's really happening? The reason I ask to disclose this whole thing is because Zizi Kodwa was on the news last night saying, this is all nonsense. And he cited several examples of where the pollsters have got it wrong. Mm. And he said, the ANC is growing, we are strong in Tswane, Togo Didiza is going to bring us lots of votes. who's telling the truth here? Is the Ipsos survey accurate? Are the people who are speaking to these Ipsos survey people telling the truth? Or is Zizi Kodwa right?
There's always, polls, surveys have not had a fantastic run in the world at the moment. So if you take the Brexit referendum last week,
they
in
got
the
it
UK,
exactly
they,
wrong.
They got it exactly wrong. So they went 52-48 for Remain, and actually it was the other way around. You look at the British elections last year, where everyone said, oh, David Cameron is toast. He won, and he actually increased his hold on power. So there's been a big debate about what is going on here. What are the biases inherent in some of these surveys? They haven't had a good run. It's not just in the UK. In several aspects in Europe, you've seen real change in people's voting, as opposed to what the surveys show. However, in defense of pollsters around the world, if you look at the American elections, for example, there's a fantastic guy who used to work for the New York Times and who runs quite serious polling now all over the United States, Nate Silver. Mm-hmm. He's got it wrong down to – sorry, got it right down to a T. Other examples exist of people getting it right. What about here in South Africa? The key thing about South Africa and surveys is that we must remember how skewed this society is. So telephone polling, for example, has its own biases. Many others have their own biases. So is it how accurate is it? Look, the ANC itself uses polls. It's used different, I think it's used Ipsos, in fact, internally. You know, you can sit there and say, no, these guys are wrong. There isn't a party, well, of the major parties, certainly the DA and the ANC, they use the same things that we are using now to talk about this. So to actually point fingers at Ipsos Machino now and say, oh, these guys are this and these guys are this, I'm skeptical. you know, if these were showing that the ANC is amazing and forging ahead, I don't think Zizi Kodwa would be singing the same tune. He'd be saying, yes, I told you so.
He's wearing very snazzy jackets and he's got a new pair of glasses and he's definitely trying to look younger.
Well, you know.
We were looking at the numbers earlier. Julius Malema is 35 years old.
Yeah.
Musi Maimane is 36 years old.
Yeah.
And Gedleyihliziwe is 74 years old. He's double their age.
There was a beautiful picture, I think it was yesterday, of some European leaders with David Cameron. Everyone looked so young. They were in their 40s or increasingly people, leaders are in their 30s.
I mean, in America, obviously, there's old people as well. Trump is 70, Hillary's 68, and Bernie's 74. Bernie is the same age as our president. And people in America keep saying how old Bernie is.
Here we keep saying how young Jay-Z is. But I mean, for me, I think that is a consideration, something to think about, that we've gone so old with our leadership. That why is it increasingly here in South Africa we're talking about unemployment and youth unemployment? Young people are the people who today need their issues addressed.
Top job in the land is reserved for old people.
For old people. And So you've got to ask yourself, why is it young people are responding so much to Julius Malema and not to the traditional parties? And perhaps there's something to be said there.
All right, let's just, as an aside from the polls in the urban areas, I'm sure that there will be one or two surprises in rural areas too.
Yeah.
You know, there are a couple of places like Clarkwa that surprised everybody the first time that vote came in. I hear Beaufort West. I hear lots of interesting things going on. Are we so exclusively focused on these three contested metros that we're missing some other stories in this election coming up in 4 weeks' time?
We are missing out on some significant stories. We're not talking enough about that rural vote. We're not talking enough. Remember that rural vote is also not rural. It's rural and then some small towns, but interesting small towns. So when you mentioned Beaufort West, I think that's where Truman Prince was. He's the guy who told people that they have to be ANC to get a tender, and he said, but what's wrong with this? He didn't see anything wrong with it. He's the guy who 10 years ago was videoed by an investigative program, I think it was on the SABC then, propositioning a sex worker, and he's remained mayor. So I mean, a place like that is just waiting for all kinds of dynamics, change, and then an appeal to, no, I will do this for you, and so forth and so forth. But we don't talk about it enough. Clarkwa had an amazing thing, because that's where, if you talk about electoral fraud in South Africa, in the new South Africa, that was the first one. But you think about a place like Mahikeng, you think about the place...
Polokwane,
for example. I mean, Polokwane, in my view, will still be ANC. But, you know, you talk about if what happened in Vuani, and you have the Malamulele, and the new Malamulele, and the old Malamulele, and those changes in leadership and so forth. Well, what is the opposition there? Is it the DA? Is it the EFF? Those people who've been protesting against the ANC, are they going to vote ANC again? The fact that you have a dynamic like one of the accused in Vuani and the torching of those schools is an ANC councillor. What does it say to the people who voted for him, and are they going to change their vote and so forth? So I think all across the country, there's big dynamics going on. If you think about KwaZulu-Natal, it was very much an IFP province a long time ago. It became very ANC. What is it now? The DA is making inroads. The NFP is suffering, and, you know, it's no longer the force it was 5 years ago. There's all kinds of rural dynamics, but we... You know, when you ask the thing about surveys, one of the things about those surveys is that we, you know, the cost of doing proper research of that nature in rural areas is massive. Mm-hmm. And so that's where the urban bias comes in. And the danger, and I think I have to acknowledge that, is that we start we start having an urban bias where we just look at the big ones and we forget about the small ones, the rural ones. But the ANC's strength remains in those rural areas. If you look at the rural vote, whether it's in 2014 at the national elections, whether it's in 2011 in the local elections, the ANC remains a very strong rural party. So in your northwest, not in the main centers, your Polokwane, not in the main centers, Mpumalanga, the Eastern Cape and KwaZulu-Natal, it's in those rural municipalities where the ANC just wipes the floor with the opposition. So it's a narrative that might be changing, but I think we don't pay enough attention. You're absolutely right.
You mentioned KZN.
Yeah, yeah.
And I heard that the ANC in KwaZulu-Natal will be asking people to help the president pay back some of the money. A lot of people are saying that it's ridiculous that he should only have to pay back 7.8 million. What about the rest? What's going to happen here? Who's going to pay the money?
I would really enjoy if our listeners would call in if they can or send us.
Sure. 0861-555-189. What do you want to know?
Who should pay for the 7.8? Are they going to make a donation? They should just tell us. I'd really like to know.
Is there anyone who's willing to donate to the president? Call us and tell us if it's you or if you really absolutely desperately will not vote for the president. Give him your money.
The president of South Africa earns more than Angela Merkel of Germany, earns more than David Cameron of the UK, earns more than many, many other presidents on the continent and elsewhere in the world. So he makes a bit of cash. But he, you know, this is a man that we know has had quite a lot of troubles.
He lives from hand to mouth.
And so who... Where is the 7.8 million going to come from? And you, dear listener, are you going to, pony up some cash and say, I see Ben is looking a bit glum. Maybe he wants to donate some money.
It's not just that he makes more than Angela Merkel. He spends nothing. So
because he doesn't have to worry about expenses. He gets free transport, right? He gets free transport and accommodation. Am I right, Justice?
Yeah. Remember the cars that were bought, not on his budget, but on the SAPS budget. How much was it? 9 or 11 million rand?
Yeah, for the wives.
For the wives, just for the wives. So, no. Expenses, basically, if you're in that office, you forget how to use cash because everything is bought for you. The groceries, everything. So, you have a point there.
What so all pocket money.
No, but it's true. Like, he doesn't have the concept of cash. So for him, these amounts is processes, right? Like, we get told, okay, you are like Michael has to pay extra for flushing his toilet, right? Now, that is it's a tangible expense for him. Whereas with him, with Zuma, there's no tangible expenses. There's just processes.
Thomas, will you be helping the president to pay back the money?
Absolutely not.
Oh, why not?
That fucker should get a resignation letter. That's all he should be getting.
He should get a resignation letter ready.
That's what he should sell for 7.8 million.
Yeah, exactly. Why is he getting away with it every time? I think the Guptas will probably give him the 8 million or 7.8 million that he needs. And he's going to live a comfortable life.
All right. Well, listen, the Guptas have more than that. They can easily bail him out.
Oh, no. The problem they face is whether they have a bank account to make the transfer from, which,
not
you know,
yesterday,
is a big issue.
Sorry, not yesterday. Last week you said that they have the most chutzpah, the most gumption of anyone in the world.
Yes.
Because they decided they might even start their own bank. Now, this week they've got some more gumption.
I think we should start an award every week, like Gumption of the Week.
The Gupta Gumption of the Week, because it's always going to be them.
It's just fantastic. So this week there are reports. Now, you know that last October, we had a change in the Minister of Mineral Resources. So what we know is that it was one lovely afternoon and Ngwako Ramatlodi was sitting there. He wrote an article that afternoon, Advocate Ramatlodi. Yeah. And it was, it was going to be published on the website of the department. And then he gets called in and told, Baba, you're going. And it's, but what have I done? What have I done wrong? It's like, Baba, you're going. And he goes. And Museveni Zizwani gets installed. And what is Museveni Zizwani famous for? Well, he flew to Switzerland to negotiate with the Guptas for to get that new mine. That new mine, we know, got prepaid. It's basically, you know, us saying to Ben, you know, can you do some work for us here at Cliff Central? And he says, yeah. And we say, no, don't worry about it. We'll pay you money up front, which doesn't happen to anyone else. And so they got prepaid all this money to supply coal to Eskom, and suddenly a company that was in trouble is making big profit. So all that. So now reports surface that Zwanele Jimimani is being lobbied by the Guptas to become the director general of the Department of Mineral Resources. I mean, you know, when every piece of media in South Africa is looking at you saying, these guys are doing this, these guys are influencing this, these guys and the president's son are
influencing this. Surely you should put your head down and keep quiet.
No. Not with so much chutzpah, this much gumption. So the Gupta family's report.
No.
So
thank you, Greta.
They don't do that. They don't keep their head down. So report last week, last Sunday, reports that, what's happening now is that they're saying Zwanele Jimimani is the right guy for the
Why
job.
Why Jimimani?
Well, if you think about it, Jimimani used to have a TV show on their channel. He is at every one of their the new age business breakfast. He's always standing up and saying
he knows who his masters are.
He is very, very clear about which side his bread is buttered, and he is you know, he pitches up at those things. So he's a big fan and a big supporter, and my view is that he it's looking good to get that job, and it will be interesting then what kind of mining licenses, what kind of mining license regime we have in South Africa and I'm not saying if, when he becomes the Director General of the Department of Mineral Resources.
What is Jimmy doing for a living right now?
He started an organization called the Progressive Business Forum, and basically it's people like yourselves in this studio who are professionals and you're progressive and you're aligned to the ANC. You can join in you know, you lobby for certain things. It's a bit like the Black Management Forum, but
surely the only people in the country that don't need to lobby are people who already have a majority in parliament, are aligned to that majority in parliament, and can get their fingers into any pie they like with a telephone call. Those are not the people who need to lobby, surely.
Well,
the minority interests need to lobby.
This is the point I think you were going to make when we get to talking about the ANC in the Eastern Cape, in the Western Cape. And it's, well, you know, if you're in the ANC, with the ANC, you won 62% of the vote, an overwhelming majority in 2014. You have to ask yourself, why am I lobbying myself to get whatever legislation through and so forth? Because you're in power. All you have to do is say, this is what we want. We're taking it to parliament. Well, we take it to our conference. We adopt it as policy. Take it to parliament, enact law, and implement
it. And it's done.
But you know, many
you can't claim to be a victim in that kind of arrangement if you're in the majority party.
You know, this is the problem. Who's in charge here? If the people in charge are complaining that they are not implementing their own policy, I'm not sure what it's. You know, this is the thing. We need to implement. Not so. Yeah. people like Jimmy Manye, it's almost like Jimmy Manye doesn't have access to the most powerful people in this country.
It must really suck when you're sitting at the master's door the whole time, polishing his shoes, and he just walks past you without giving you the tip.
Well, this is the thing, or else there's some other reason why we have these things, but I'm not sure what those reasons could be.
All right, there are two other things I want to discuss with you while you're still here. Mm. I mean, it's Friday. You got some time?
Yeah. Let's keep going.
Number one. Gareth van Onselen just wrote a really interesting article, and I just breezed through it, but basically about the ANC, for all their problems in being in government in most of the provinces in this country, seem to be much better at being in government than being in opposition. The minute they're in opposition, they go into free fall, and they just don't seem to be able to get a handle on what it is to be an opposition party. In the Western Cape, they have made no gains since the DA took over. In fact, their losses have been spectacular. What's going on here? Is the ANC, once it loses an election, is there no way for them to climb back up?
Can you do me a favor? Can you play that Gweda thing you've just played? I'll tell you why afterwards.
No.
I love that clip. I love it. You know, Gweda Mantashe complained about a year and a half ago about the fact that in Kenya, the liberation movement that was led by Jomo Kenyatta now basically doesn't exist. That I think doesn't have a single MP in parliament. It's gone. It's disappeared. It lost and then kept on going into coalitions and so forth and so forth. So what you have now, led by Uhuru Kenyatta, is not, I think it was KANU. Yeah. It's gone. It's disappeared. It's boom, bam, done.
Finished.
And so his thing was, if the ANC, and he repeated this last October, if the ANC goes below 60%, he said psychologically, that will be a body blow for the ANC. What is happening to the ANC in the Western Cape? You think about it, it's essentially what happens or has happened to many liberation movements all over the continent, where you come into power, people absolutely adore you, and they say, our dreams, our hopes are carried by this movement, and we are going to be fantastic and amazing. And so you get into parliament and you start implementing, but you don't do enough. And so your support starts waning and waning and waning. And after about 20 years, you start basically free falling into oblivion. It happened with Kenneth Kaunda in Zambia. It happened with Mugabe, who lost an election in 2002 in Zimbabwe, and basically has been stealing and beating elections since then. It's the story of liberation movements, perhaps except for Congress Party in India, which took a little bit longer to get to that point. So the story of the ANC in the Eastern Cape, the ANC and the Western Cape, in the Western Cape, and the story of the ANC in the city of Cape Town. By the way, let's not forget that the ANC used to run city of Cape Town, and used to run at some point around the Western Cape.
Mfeketo was the mayor.
Yeah, Noma India Mfeketo. So what Gareth van Onselen has written about the ANC's inability to run a challenge to a sitting party certainly is right for the city of Cape Town, and it will be interesting for me to do the comparison with KwaZulu-Natal, where the ANC was in opposition to the IFP, but that was very early on in 1994, and we know the correlation. There was, you know, there was violence in 1994, there was history with the ANC and IFP and so forth, but that has changed totally, where the ANC is now in power, but faces many, many problems in the province. Certainly the ANC campaign in the city of Cape Town and other parts of the Western Cape has been abysmal. First of all, you have Marius Fransman, who gets into a sex scandal he can't extricate himself from. When those SMSs emerged, I mean, do you want the face of your campaign, right? It's cool.
K-E-W-L.
I mean, ah, it's so yucky. Ah, I don't even want to think about it. So you have that one. Two, then, you know, the most vociferous opposition to the DA, the SES Corner movement, implodes right in front of us. And one of the poo protesters, remember, you had Andy Lelili and Loiso Nkotla. Loiso Nkotla is the other guy who used to collect poo from various settlements and then go and throw it in front of the the Western Cape Legislature and the city hall. Well, boom, a week and a half ago, that radical a movement and leader says, I'm joining the DA, and the ANC is nowhere to be seen in this. I had to laugh when the ANC unveiled its mayoral candidates at poor Mr. What's his name? Sotashe, who's the candidate in the Cape Town race. You know, it was almost like, oh, here he is, but we're not going to do anything about it. So in terms of just running an election campaign from the opposition benches, the ANC has been horrific. The ANC has been really terrible in the city of Cape Town. They had Tony Ehrenreich running against the DA as their candidate in 2011, he got nowhere, and his record in the municipality has just been, essentially, he's run an ideological battle instead of running a battle on the basis of delivery, and this is what the ANC can do. So instead, you know, it's been full of insults and so forth. While Patricia de Lille, to her credit, has run a campaign that says this is what we've done and this is what we will do even better in the next 5 years.
Do you think that the DA might end up with a two-thirds majority in the Western Cape?
Well, at this rate, I mean, from being a minority, the DA just keeps on growing. It's growing so significantly that if you think about it, the point you made earlier on in the program about are we forgetting the rural areas, the outlying areas, we're almost forgetting about the Western Cape in general in these elections because, well, we know that
it's a fait accompli.
It's a fait accompli. It's a bit like what we used to do with the rest of the country, that, oh, we know the ANC will win. And so you have a very strong campaign being run by the DA to stay in power, and I think it will because it's convincing more and more people that it's doing a good job. Whether you dispute that or not, it's convincing the people, and that is shown in the consistent upward trajectory of their results. The key thing for all of us to realize is that the DA is interesting in electoral terms because it's the one party that has grown in the new South Africa. If you look at from 1994...
And obviously the EFF, but it's early days.
The EFF, yeah. You know, it would be hard to say it's growing because it's only had one election far. But everyone else, so the DA goes from 1.7% in 1994, and consistently in local and national elections, it goes up and it's sitting at 22% as of 2014. That's massive growth. The ANC is the only other party that's grown because the ANC went from 62 to 69, but has now gone down to 62. So the narrative for the DA is a positive one and has been a positive one. The challenge for them in the Eastern Cape and elsewhere is whether they can grow on that 22% to 28, 27, and so forth. And certainly in a place like Tshwane, they will see that. I think they will definitely see some improvement. Other parts of the country will see, certainly in the Western Cape, where the ANC is helping the DA by running such a divided... I mean, Julius Malema ran a better campaign in the Western Cape than the ANC, yeah, which is an established party.
Okay, here are a couple of messages coming in. Tyrell says, I'm not going to call in because I'm overseas. I have to work hard and slave very hard to carry on. Because our president opens his mouth and our rand weakens, I end up having to pay more. So screw him. He can donate cash to us. Carl says, I think we should all donate used dildos and then the president can sell them on Gumtree to come up with the money. That's all I'll be willing to donate. Anushka says, morning, Justice. Whether we want to donate the millions to Zuma or not, he will take it. That's just how it is. The question is, will we allow him to continue with this mockery?
I mean, that's quite a question. You know, South Africans, I think last Friday, so we've been doing this for more than a year now, and we've been doing it on Thursday mornings. We had a wobbly last week and this week with doing it on Friday morning. But last Friday was interesting because we spoke and I left, and an hour later, two things happened at about the same time. Mm-hmm. At about 9:13 a.m., there's David Cameron in the UK saying, I failed to lead the people of the UK. Mm-hmm. I failed to lead them to a Remain vote. And so
I'm out.
Someone else needs to lead this country into this new place, a new political environment. Here at home, I think it was the Joburg High Court. I'm not sure about which court it was exactly, but President Zuma had and the NPA had appealed. Had asked for leave to appeal the decision for him to not be charged with those 783 counts. 783 counts of fraud, corruption, and racketeering, okay? So the courts say you have no chance of appealing.
And racketeering is such a horrible charge. I mean,
racketeering means that we are sitting here essentially plotting to steal, okay? That's racketeering for you. It's conspiracy. So
and the court said,
no way.
You can't have leave-topia.
Exactly. So what does he do? He says, I'm studying the judgment.
David Cameron resigns over just losing a referendum by a few percentage points.
So look at all the, do you call them memes? All the memes that have been circulating. You know, people saying, President Zuma's laughing, saying, he resigned over that?
That's ridiculous.
That's just quite a funny one. And others, just the pictures of him and so forth and so forth. And you sit there and say, what is consequence in South Africa? What is consequence when you have a president who the courts say you must face trial for those 783 counts of fraud, corruption?
That's a lot of counts.
783 counts.
It would take most of us a lifetime to ratchet up that number of counts, right?
And racketeering.
Racketeering of all the things.
I love it. Sounds so FBI. Anyway.
Sounds like Al Capone in the 1920s. No,
that's what you're going down for, racketeering. You're like a gangster.
But if you're racketeering and frauding as much as this, surely you've got 8 million just to go, okay, cool, here, have this. I mean, how bad was he at fraud and racketeering?
Surely you got a big pile of cash at this stage.
Just because you frauded and racketeered doesn't mean that you made some cash. You know, you guys need to,
you might have just been used by other people to make their cash. I wonder who that could be.
Racketeering.
All right, there's one last thing we've got to talk about.
Okay, just one quick thing on this thing. So for me, the key thing was, guys, when is consequence? When I think it's Anushka who says, when is this thing going to end? The key thing is, when will people say, you know what, I can't lead my people when I've got 783 counts of this, when I've got the Constitutional Court saying you unduly benefited from building yourself a 246 million rand.
You failed to uphold the Constitution.
You failed to uphold and protect the Constitution. Failed
that alone should be reason to resign.
And he doesn't resign. So, I mean, this is it's debilitating.
And the last thing I want to talk about is, I've saved it to the end because it's the best. We've got to talk SABC and Claudio Motsoeneng. You were mentioning earlier that people in Brazil who have one or two journalists on the ground are getting better information than the average South African who has to rely on the SABC. The SABC is collapsing all around him, but Claudio doesn't even, he's not even sure that such a thing as censorship exists.
He says it's not an African concept. What is that?
What does that mean?
What does that mean? I mean, so can I just say, I you know, I don't actually really want to talk about Saudi. Saudi is so, it's so terrible. But I want to talk about, what do you say? The ANC was formed, you know, people must really read up on the ANC. The ANC was formed by a kid in KwaZulu-Natal called Pixley Kaisakaso.
That's right.
That guy went to Oxford University in 1906.
He established the first black newspaper in the country.
He went to Columbia University in 1901 and got an award as the best debater and speaker at the university. So the quality of leader that we've had in this country, from Pixley Kaisakaseme, Nelson Mandela, John Dubey, all these amazing, incredible, amazing people. What is happening in our society when we have mediocrity of the nature and level of Claudio Motsoeneng?
But it's not even mediocre. He's below average.
He is way below. And so you look at him and you look at many other parts of our public life which are dominated by this mediocrity. And you start saying, what exactly have we done? And I think what happened, and this is where members of the ANC can, you know, send SMSs in and tweets, because we need to have a talk. What happened in Polokwane in 2007? Because I think what happened in Polokwane was that Thabo Mbeki, with all his faults, there was a choice between a quality ANC and a mediocre ANC. And the ANC chose a mediocre leader in Jacob Zuma. And we have seen a huge spread of that mediocrity in our public life. Because if you look at government today, you look at Faith Mutambi, the communications minister, you want to weep at some of the things she says and does. You look at some of the quality of our ministers and you say, wow, such mediocrity at play. So it's not just Saudi. It's the mediocrity that has come to define the past 7 years since 2009, when President Jacob Zuma saw that he will protect and uphold this constitution. Has he done it? Well, if you watch the SABC, you certainly are not getting news that should be provided by a public broadcaster, and that's a dereliction and an abrogation of his oath of office. That's my view.
And the people who suffer are the ordinary people of South Africa, who are dependent on the SABC as their only source of information. Very often they don't have the internet, they can't listen to you on Cliff Central once a week. They don't have a satellite television.
This is the thing. This is the thing.
We are constantly punishing the people who are already at the bottom.
Yeah. And so,
same as in Tswane.
Think about on Sunday, President Zuma. I mean, I don't know. Where's Michael Flax? Because Michael needs to put in a request for you guys to interview the president. Because the president was on Ukhozi FM on Sunday. That's the biggest radio station in South Africa. 8 million people listen to that station on a daily basis, something like that.
Yeah, it's huge.
It's huge. But if Claudio Motsoeneng is in charge of the SABC, what kind of questions were asked on Sunday and were put to President Zuma? The fact that he didn't uphold the constitution, did he have to account to those 8 million people? No. So our democracy is being undermined by the mediocrity that has come to be the norm. It's wrong. It shouldn't happen.
All right, Justice, there's lots to think about. We've got food for thought for the week. Let's end off with something from Claudio.
Halala, my Freestata, halala. Halala, Limpopo, halala. Halala, Gauteng, halala. halala KwaZulu Natal, halala. Halala Western Cape, halala.
All right, that's all we have to say. That's what he said.
That's like a political rally.
Thank you, Justice Malala. The burning, not Justice Halal, Justice Malala, and the burning platform today on cliffcentral.com. Brought to you by Nando's. Thank you, Justice. We'll see you next week.
Absolute pleasure.
This is cliffcentral.com.